emotions. This is often an area of, it's always challenging in our meditation, but the question often comes, how do I work with that in this style of practice? So I'm just going to offer a little bit of suggestions, of thoughts, of reflections on working with difficulty before we open to some questions. So the first thing I'll say is, when a difficulty arises that feels strong enough to keep you from being mindful, like sometimes an emotion will arise that's so strong that trying to be mindful of it just pulls you back into the emotion. For me, this was early in my practice. Anger was this emotion, and I found that when I tried to be mindful of anger for a length of time, if I tried to stay with it, I would just get sucked right back into it, because being with the anger kind of brought the thoughts up. The thoughts were sticky, and those thoughts pulled me right back into the anger. And so I found that I could initially acknowledge and recognize, yep, there's anger here, and wow, it's really strong, and I know that it's stronger than my capacity to be mindful in this moment. So this is a discernment. There's a kind of a wisdom there that helps us to recognize, yep, I know this is happening, and if I continue trying to be with it, it will pull me out. And so in that kind of a situation, it can be helpful to just let yourself turn to something else. Just turn to something neutral, something simple in experience. Even for a minute or two, just give your mind a break from that challenging experience. Let the mind settle, reconnect, remember what awareness is. Carol Wilson calls this refreshing the awareness, refreshing the mindfulness. So we remember, right? I can be mindful. And sometimes what I found that when I did that, I turned my attention away from something challenging, like that anger in particular. You know, what was really fueling the anger was all of those thoughts. And as I gave myself a 2-minute break from it, it let those thoughts diminish. And so there was much of an easier time to just step away from it. It didn't keep catching me at that point. So there is a place in this practice for directing the attention away from an experience. If the mind is too caught by the experience, trying to be with that experience will just like escalate the reactivity of the mind. And so there's a place for redirecting the attention. For many of you have been practicing for a while, and so you have tools in your toolbox that might help you to settle the mind. You're welcome to use any of those tools. It might help you to bring in some metta, or it might help you to turn to a particular experience, a kind of a concentration, or it might help you to take a walk in nature, or whatever it is that for you supports you. And what I will also say is that very often, especially early in this practice, we are inclined to believe that we can't be aware of a difficulty when we actually could be. So give yourself a little bit of a chance to work with the difficulty before assuming you can't be mindful of it. Sometimes it's just a belief in the mind, because we have a kind of a preference or a sense that if I were being mindful properly, this wouldn't be happening. And so we feel in some ways like the thing itself means I'm not being mindful. And that's just a kind of a confusion. It's a mistaken belief. We can be mindful of anything. And so sometimes I will encourage people, if you are able to be with something, it may not go away. That's another belief often with working with difficulty. If I'm mindful of it, it will go away. If I'm mindful of it, it won't be so hard or something like that. And so the kind of the opening to the possibility that yes, I can be mindful of it and it might not go away. So if you can be with it and it's not getting stronger, it may not be getting weaker, but if it's not getting stronger, then there's some place for learning and there is some capacity to be with it. So that's one kind of guidance. Something often happens. How do I know when to turn aside? How do I know when to set it aside and go to something else? If you're able to be with it and it's not getting stronger, you can keep playing with it for a little while. After a little while, the mind might get a little tired of working with a challenge. And at that point, it can get caught again. So it may be that you can play with something challenging, a physical pain in the body or a challenging emotion for a few minutes in that way. Just give yourself an opportunity to learn about being present with a challenge with mindfulness. So some tools, some ways to explore being with something challenging. So physical pain, one of the things about physical pain often is that people feel, especially in the formal sitting practice, often the sitting posture itself is contributing to a physical discomfort. And there's the question of, can I move? And yes, you can move. But what can be useful is to explore a little bit first the experience of pain. What is the actual physical sensation? And what is the attitude about it? So those two, noticing the relationship to the physical pain, because very often the actual physical sensation is not as strong as the attitude is making it out to be. So there's the physical sensation and the idea of kind of the mind is projecting onto that physical sensation. This is a problem. I'm sitting for another 40 minutes, and if this continues, it's going to be really painful. But it's not really painful right now. It's the mind projecting the idea of this continuing for a long time that makes it think it's a problem or is creating that tension. And so noticing the difference between the physical experience and the attitude about it. So there's the physical experience, there's the idea, the view, the aversion, beliefs that are happening. So kind of opening to that. And before this investigation begins, it can be useful. Sayadaw sometimes says, you know, at the beginning of an investigation around physical pain, you can tell yourself it will be okay to move if it gets too hard to do this. But give yourself the opportunity to practice with it a little bit. So, physical pain and the relationship to it. What is the actual experience? What is actually happening? What is the actual physical sensation? Sometimes we find that the actual physical sensation is not that physically painful. The idea, the aversion, aversion itself is an unpleasant experience, and the aversion and the physical pain kind of multiply to make the entire experience feel more unpleasant. So what is the actual sensation of pain, and what is the relationship? And noticing the distinction between those two. Well, that's a little bit about working with physical pain. And then again, at a certain point, if it gets too challenging, or if it feels like sometimes you might notice the kind of attitude shifting. The attitude might be really aversive, and then it weakens, and it's like, oh, it's actually not that unpleasant. But then it gets strong again because the idea of 30 more minutes happens in the mind, and so the whole experience gets more painful, and then it weakens. So you might notice the relationship. So you're learning something about conditionality here. You're learning something about how the mind affects the body, how the mind affects the experience. Really useful understanding. And if it gets too challenging, then let yourself move. It's fine. At the beginning of the whole practice, you can tell yourself it's okay to move if it gets too challenging. And that can give the mind some space to work with it a little bit. So it is fine to move. It's fine to have some movement in our sitting practice. And when you choose to move, be aware of it. We can be aware of movement. We can be aware of shifting the body. We can be aware of the motivation to move before we move. So awareness of the whole thing, whatever happens, we can be aware of it. Then working with more emotional kind of difficulty, reactivity in the mind. This is where a lot of our challenge comes. We'll think of something, so thinking plays into this a lot often, the relationship between thought and reactivity. Thought often will trigger a reactivity. A memory will arise. A physical sensation will happen that will trigger a memory, and then the memory will kind of trigger all of the thoughts and emotions about the situation, and then that it can escalate. So the first thing to notice is if you are kind of waking up or aware of the escalation, sometimes this can happen so fast that the whole cycle just spins us into reactivity. And waking up into that or becoming aware of that reactivity, first thing to notice is, yes, there's reactivity. So really just kind of take that in, kind of the whole of it, aware that this emotional reactivity is happening. It can be useful to kind of, when the reactivity is strong, kind of check into various areas of experience, some questions that might come or can be useful to explore the reactivity. How does this emotion make the body feel? Again, the use of questions in this practice is not necessarily to try to figure it out, but dropping in that question when there's a strong emotion arising, well, how does this emotion make the body feel? Then not necessarily trying to do it, but that very question can then begin to orient the mind to begin to be curious about how the body feels. Sayadaw Utejaniya speaks about the questions being a kind of a condition to support curiosity, but not necessarily something to do. So how does it make the body feel? And you may notice, you know, some contraction or tension or tightness in the throat or in the heart or in the stomach. You may notice tension in the muscles. You may notice a clenching of the jaw. So there can be some very specific sensations associated with emotions. And another curiosity, maybe not just how does this make the body feel, but I talked earlier about the kind of diffuse experiences. The emotions often have a component of this diffuse quality felt in the body that can feel vague, distributed, dispersed, a sense of almost like mist or fog in the physical sensation area. A felt sense of the whole emotion in a way. This is also a very useful piece. I mean, I think we tend to, as in our early practice with mindfulness, the first things that are obvious are the more specific sensations that happen. They're the sensations of the contractions, or you know, the throat tightening, or the jaw clenching, or the pressure in the stomach, or the tightening of the stomach. Those more specific sensations, you know, sensations that maybe are about the size of a grapefruit, you know, things like that. That's the easiest thing for us to land on often, and this more diffuse feeling, much harder to connect with because it's so dynamic. It's more like a mist or fog it's got a quality kind of like the Northern Lights. You know, what if you I've never seen the Northern Lights in person. It's on my bucket list. I'd love to see the Northern Lights in person, but just that image of having seen videos of the Northern Lights, the way they shift and move and change and deepen in one place and then, you know, weaken elsewhere, just that kind of curtain-like nature, mist and colors shifting and changing. You don't really see that by looking at one particular part of it. It's more the whole of that experience that create that, that that's there's the sense of seeing the shifty, changing nature of it as a whole. We can take in the whole of that. And in a similar way, our feeling level of experience in the body can have that quality. It can feel like a shifting, changing curtain of Northern Lights of energetic experience in the body. That level of experience with emotions is a very useful skill to cultivate. And it's not obvious at first. This aspect of the emotional, it's kind of like the boundary or the interface is a good word. The interface between body and mind, this felt sense of that diffuse experience through the body. It's often connected with an emotional quality, a tone. It can be wholesome or unwholesome. There can be tones like this affect with concentration, with happiness, with equanimity. There can be this kind of quality of this diffuse experience. And also with the emotional field, with anger, anxiety, confusion, frustration, irritation. There can be this bodily experience that's very diffuse. It's really useful to get to know this level of experience and familiar with it, partly because it seems to be almost the kind of the place where the whole kind of experience kind of grows out of that more diffuse area. It becomes more specific out of that diffuseness. So this kind of exploration, for me is really, I think this is one of the great powers of this style of meditation practice. Really, I do feel like it was Sayadaw pointing to the experience as a whole that helped me to feel into this kind of quality, mental, physical quality, this combination of body and mind happening together, the broadness of it. And it turns out to be really useful in working with challenge and also in working with the wholesome states. Being aware of, for instance, ease and calm, that's a very diffuse state. We haven't, I think, in our cultures appreciated or valued this kind of awareness, the awareness of this kind of experience. We much more value the specific, the precise, the what we can point to. We can't really point to this experience. It's much, as soon as you point to one part of it, it's already shifted and changed, and another part of it is moving. So the you know, this kind of broad experience can be a really useful skill to begin to cultivate. We haven't valued it so much as a culture, and so it's harder for us to land with. It can be harder for us to kind of connect with it over time. Much easier to connect with something precise and specific, like the sensations, changing sensations of an experience of breathing, or the sensations of pressure. on the body, or the contraction of the way that fear makes the stomach contract, much easier to connect with. And yet the vague, diffuse experience can be, it's like it's almost the ground that the whole emotional field is connected to. So learning to be connected with that can both kind of help us navigate in daily life, help us navigate knowing kind of the undercurrents of our lives, becoming aware of them, because this level of experience is more habitually in the subconscious. And so becoming aware of it allows us to see kind of into where some of the motivations and intentions are springing from, this more diffuse kind of experience. So in terms of a question that might support exploring this when there's a strong emotion, what's the whole feeling of this? What's the whole sense, the whole felt sense of this? And for me, the relaxation of mind, it's like when the mind is relaxed, it seems to be able to take in a broader kind of experience. And so, what's the whole of this experience? And then again, not looking for it. If you start looking for it, it's almost like it will vanish right in front of you. So, what's the whole of it? And then let yourself be very broad and soft to receive what the whole of it might be. We know how to do this. Our system knows how to receive broad, diffuse experience. We may not consciously know how to connect with that so well, but I'll give you an example. The example of the Northern Lights is a good example. I mean, if you've seen the videos of that, the kind of the softness of just seeing that and not looking at any piece of it, but just seeing it, just receiving, taking in the whole of it. Looking up at the Milky Way versus seeing the moon or seeing a star, the kind of soft gaze that allows you to take in the vastness of the Milky Way. Or in going out into a humid day, on a day where the humidity is high. We know the experience of humidity as a diffuse experience. It's not because of a precise location of a drop of water on the skin. It's a broader experience of just knowing, yep, it's humidity. And there's a lot of things that contribute to it. Some of it is the feeling of the air on the skin. Some of it's the way it comes in through the nose and the mouth, the sensations in the nose and the mouth. It's a broad experience that we know that. And so we also can take in this broader experience within mental states. So when there's a challenging emotion, sometimes connecting to this broader state can be informative. It also can be a little bit, feel a little unstable, like, don't really know what I'm paying attention to. And so if you touch into it and it feels a little bit wobbly, that's okay. Let yourself touch into it, and then perhaps the attention can go back to something more specific. But it can be useful to begin to cultivate this more broad sense of the felt sense of the whole experience. Other explorations that are useful with difficulty, what kind of thoughts are coming with this? What kind of thoughts does this trigger so that you're consciously connecting to not only the emotion, but the kind of the thought pattern. What's the attitude with this emotion? What's the relationship to having this emotion? Another useful exploration. And a more specific question around attitude is, what's being believed in relationship to this emotion? What's being believed? So again, you can drop these questions in and see if there's an understanding that comes. It's almost like the questions let the what's bubbling in the subconscious maybe come up into the conscious a little bit more. So there was a question about the four attitudes, and that seems relevant here in terms of talking about emotions. What's the relationship to the emotion? It might be the four basic attitudes are related, the first three related to reactive states of mind, greed, aversion, delusion. So there might be a wanting something to continue. And paradoxically, even with something like anger, there can be a hooking to it. It's like a wanting to be angry in order to justify ourselves or something. So there can be a leaning in, even to reactive states of mind. So what's the relationship? Yeah, I'm right here. That kind of sense of, I want to think this more to kind of shore up that sense of I'm right. It could be aversion. Sometimes the experience of reactive emotions can be unpleasant, often unpleasant. And so when there's unpleasantness, often there's aversion. So yeah, there's anger and I don't like it. I wish it weren't here. So noticing the relationship. The third connected with reactivity is delusion. And delusion can manifest as a kind of disconnection from experience, a kind of spacing out, not being so aware. That's one way that delusion manifests. But the more insidious way that delusion manifests is through our beliefs, through our views, through our ideas. And so, what kind of beliefs are happening? A view that doesn't necessarily feel like an emotion itself, the view itself is like just the belief, just the idea that this is the way things are, a belief that we're taking to be the truth of the world. Sometimes when we don't see beliefs, we're just taking them to be the way reality is, and we're not aware that they are beliefs. We just take them to be truth. And so the question about what is being believed here? What's being believed? And, underlying greed and aversion, I think I mentioned this yesterday, underlying greed and aversion, there is a belief often that with greed, the belief that if I get that thing, if I have and can hold on to that thing, then I will be happy. And that whole belief system that I need to hold on to something in order to be happy is motivating that pattern of wanting and holding on to. With aversion, the belief motivating aversion is I need to get rid of that. I can't be okay unless that thing goes away. That's the belief that's associated with it. The aversion itself is the pushing away. The belief is not going to be happy unless that thing goes away. So, attending to or curious about the beliefs that are associated with our emotions, also very useful. The fourth is wise attitude, the okayness with things as they are, the ease, the peace with things as they are, the mind that is at ease with things as they are. Now, that experience, I didn't mention this yesterday, the experience of okayness can have a lot of flavors to it. So sometimes that okayness can be felt just as a kind of an equanimity, a balance of mind, an ease, something like that. So it doesn't have a lot of emotional tone. It's just like, yeah, it's okay. It's not a problem. So it can have that flavor. It also can be felt as a kind of a love or a care or a concern. It can have that flavor. It can have the quality of a patience. So there can be a lot of wholesome when we touch into the okayness there. And this is this place of recognizing the diffuse quality of emotions can be interesting in noticing wise attitude as well, because that the quality of the okayness is also a very diffuse experience. It's not something that is easy to land on and point to. And opening to, okay, yeah, it's okay. What is the whole feeling of okayness? What's the Northern Lights feeling of okayness? What's that like? And in that place, you might begin to see some fluctuations or some enterings of love and patience and joy, even delight in the being with experience, even a challenging experience. So that fourth attitude is wise attitude.